station promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to Tuesday. It's September 17th.
Does it feel like a Tuesday?
It does feel like a Tuesday.
I think it actually does.
It does feel like a Tuesday.
Like, Tuesday is one of those odd middle days that you think it feels like something else. But you know what?
Yeah.
For once, it actually feels like a Tuesday.
Okay. Well, I was hoping we wouldn't talk about what day it is, but that's fine.
All right, fine. Change the subject. Talk about what you want to talk about.
You're getting me every morning with those things.
All right, fine, Sam. It's all about you.
Me.
Go on.
Okay. It's
all
about me.
All right. Hey, well, get ready for tomorrow, because you know what happens then.
I know what happens then, yeah. I'd rather not start the show on Wednesday.
That's what I thought, yeah. I start the show Wednesday.
You know, I did see that commercial with the camel, though.
You did see
it?
Yeah, I did see it. Yeah, do you know what I'm talking about now?
Yeah, the hump day. That's pretty funny, yeah.
Yeah, I saw it again. Not too long ago. I think it was when I was watching football.
Yeah.
And, they're playing it. And, you know, of course, like, they had the sound on for a different game.
Uh-huh.
So I couldn't actually, you know, hear it. But I saw it. And I was like, ah, it's my camel commercial. And I was like, what? I'm like, no, you don't get it. Never mind.
No, huh? So, that's good. So your team is 2-0, right? You guys won both games?
Yes.
Okay, good for you.
Thank God.
Yeah. I posted on Facebook, why is it that LA still doesn't have a football team, you know? And we were talking about it yesterday, right?
It.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're working on it or not.
I've actually seen photos of, like, you know, what they're, you know, possibly doing with the upcoming stadium.
Mm.
Like one of the convention centers or something. They're, like, expanding that.
Yeah.
And then,
they have the Coliseum. I don't know why they can't use that, you know, maybe upgrade it a little bit or something, you know. But we could use a football team here. We're the second largest city in the country, you know.
Yeah, we could.
And it's pathetic, I think.
Yeah, I know a while back there was sort of talk about the Buffalo Bills moving over here to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know if that's still, you know, a possibility, but I do remember hearing that not too long ago.
Yeah. So. Well, someone mentioned that LA wants a lot of money out of a team, so maybe that's why they can't pay it, you know, like 40... No, I don't know how much. 40 billion? No.
I don't know.
Doesn't make sense. 40 million. But at any rate, that's still a lot of money. So I don't know what's going to happen. But hopefully we'll get a team soon. I remember when we got the Raiders, not a lot of people were happy about it. But that was some of their best days when they were here in LA. You know, they had a lot of great players and stuff, and they did well. But, people didn't really welcome them here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. People are too stuck up here. Oh, guys from Oakland? I don't know about that. You know? I like them, though. I don't know.
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like now, you know, people would accept a football team here because I feel like they're just so ready.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we would.
Look, when we had the Rams
here, people were happy with it. You know, people supported them and stuff, you know.
Yeah, now
but
they're in
that was
St.
then.
Louis.
Yeah, but that was then, you know.
Yeah,
so we couldn't keep
then.
A team here, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think now we definitely could.
Yeah.
Keep a team here.
It would be cool, yeah.
I remember, did you ever watch Entourage?
No,
that
never.
That show, HBO?
Never.
Well, the Jeremy Piven's character, Ari Gold, at one point, one of the episodes, he was, like, in negotiation with, you know, trying to, like, have a football team here in Los Angeles. Just made me think of that.
Really?
Oh, I remember that episode. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, so I guess people do talk about it. It's just that nothing's happening.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? Yeah. We have a special guest in the studio. We'll get to him in just a second. I wanted to bring up a couple of things. And they're asking here, how much sex is considered exercise?
Oh, boy. Here
so,
we go.
Yeah. So
now it's Sam's show.
I mean, it does feel like you get exercise sometimes, you know, if it's... you know, if it's pretty wild and stuff, then you lose some weight. Now, they're saying that sex lasts 6 minutes on average. Now, I don't know who that average is, but 6 minutes is very short. So
six
I don't know about this.
Is
yeah.
the average?
That's the average, yeah. So that only burns
is that
about...
Is that in the world or in Los Angeles
I don't know.
Or specifically
no, probably
anywhere?
The,
or
maybe in the country or something.
The country?
I don't know, yeah. Huh. But... So
oh, wow.
I don't know, but yeah, 6 minutes. So with that 6 minutes, you only lose about 21 calories. So they're saying you want to go for 30 minutes.
Oh my gosh, they're like a chart, like a legitimate chart. It's like if you have
not
sex
chart,
this long, you use this many calories.
Probably,
and,
yeah.
I mean,
they probably calculated it. So yeah. if you go for 30 minutes, it's 85 to 100 calories. That's a little more meaningful, right?
For a half hour.
Yeah. Hmm. She's looking at me like, oh, my God, half hour.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know. It's been like I know nothing about that.
Yeah, you forgot all about
that
it,
world.
Right?
I have. I don't know. Trying to, like, think back so much time ago.
To the good old days,
when
huh?
to the good old days of relationships when I got action.
I don't know how you manage it. That's good.
But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't think I ever really like timed it out. Like looked at the clock when we started and then finished and be like, all right, how long was that? Like
I know. And plus you gotta count the foreplay too and stuff, you know. So that's that takes some time, you know.
That's true. So are they counting foreplay or they're just
probably not. I can't imagine 6 minutes would be including foreplay.
Okay.
I mean, I'd hate that guy.
Okay.
That would
yeah.
be in bed with me for that short of time.
Okay, so it's from like the time of like the moment that the D is in the V until it's out.
Probably.
Then it's like, okay, like ready, set, go. Like
right.
time it.
And then count the calories like, and how many pounds you lost.
How do they figure that average though? Like they just take like a survey and
yeah,
just
probably.
Do a poll of like, okay, what's the average
they do studies
amount of time
about
that you
everything.
Have sex?
Yeah. They do studies about everything.
Yeah, that's true. But it's who are these people that participate in these studies? Like how do they figure out
I don't know who they are.
I never quite got
I have no idea. But when they say a study, you kind of like watch it and go, well, I don't know who made the study, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, it makes the news, so what the heck, you know.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Now, just to sort of lead in into our guest, I wanted to bring this up that because we're going to be talking about children and abuse and things like that. I don't know if you heard of this, but this 8-year-old girl in Yemen was married off to a 40-year-old guy. She's 8 years old.
8 years old?
Yeah. And after the wedding night, she died from injuries, internal injuries and stuff.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, what would you expect from an 8-year-old girl having sex, you know, with a grown man? So, so this is like, you know, this is like... In Yemen, and it's considered okay, you know? But
that's murder.
People,
that's not okay.
Yeah, yeah. But the authorities are just, like, calling the report baseless. Okay, this is what they do. This is what the police does there.
Oh, wow.
But, you see, the thing is, you have to understand that this is a culture where these things are okay, you know? They're still in the Stone Age. They haven't made those rules that we have, you know? So that's terrible, and I just wanted to bring this up because it broke my heart, man. I mean, an 8-year-old, come on, you know? I mean, that's ridiculous.
I mean, is she even, like, you know, matured? And,
no.
You know, like,
no,
that's impossible probably for her to get pregnant anyway. So it's like, what's the point if she's not, you know?
Yeah, well.
On a cycle yet? I mean, what the hell?
Yeah. So people are crazy, you know.
That's sick. That's very sick. Disgusting.
All right. Well, so much for disgusting stuff. And we're going to bring in our guest this morning. And we invited Jeff Monteith to the show. Welcome, Jeff.
Good morning. How you doing, Sam?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. So tell us, you're part of an organization that's yours, right?
Yes.
What's that organization?
I own a corporation here in California, Third Echelon Investigations. We're an international private investigative and protective firm based here in Los Angeles.
Okay.
With offices throughout the U.S. and Germany, London.
Really?
Yeah.
How long have you had that?
I've had the company for about 7 years now, incorporated in the last four, and I've been in the industry itself for about 17 years.
Oh, really? Oh, so you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. For some time.
So, so private investigation, but you guys do a lot more than that, right?
Right.
I mean, do you get involved in like extracting children and things like that?
Yes. I've done a few of those out of the Pacific Rim, Japan.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Wow. I know that's a big problem, and we'll talk about it in a minute. But let's find out a little bit about you and stuff. Are you originally from here, from L.A.?
No, originally I'm from the East Coast, from Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay. Well, we just had a tragedy.
Your nation's capital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you hear about the shooting yesterday?
I know. We were talking about it yesterday.
Oh,
I
we guess, were?
Yeah. Well, at that point, I knew that four people were dead, but now there's even more. Well, I think like there's like 12, 13, 13 or something.
Yeah.
Ugh, wow. Terrible.
So you're from D.C. Did you
Washington, D.C.
Yeah, there you go.
I actually have a family member getting married at the Navy Yard this weekend.
Are you serious?
Oh,
wow.
Gosh.
Wow. So it's a pretty small town, huh? I mean, everybody knows everybody.
D.C. is one of the biggest small cities probably in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Did you have a good childhood there?
I grew up a punk rock kid.
Really?
To D.C. between D.C. and Baltimore.
Oh, really?
It was what it was.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. So what were you doing there when you...
I left D.C. for high school. And
oh,
I moved
really?
To Miami. I graduated high school in Miami.
How did you end up doing there? I mean, your family moved or something?
I ran away.
You ran away to Miami?
I certainly did.
Dang.
Wow. Wow. I can see where you got the basis for what you do now then, right? I mean, with like a runaway kid and things like that. I mean, it sounds...
When I left Miami, I graduated high school there, and then I moved to New York for a few years, and then to Atlanta when I was 21 years old. Mm-hmm. And I did the punk rock band thing for some time. And when I got to about 25, 26 years old, I decided it was time to maybe... I'm still alive. Maybe I should do something with myself.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
And where to go.
So how old were you when you left the house? When you ran away?
16.
16. Wow. Yeah. That takes a lot of courage.
You just got like a plane ticket or you drove?
Greyhound, baby.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Like legit. Like a legit runaway. Right.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. And how did you get the money to survive? Did you work and stuff?
I did a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like got into illegal things.
That's usually the case. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's usually the case. You know, how else are you going to survive? So did you know anybody in Miami?
No.
No, nothing, huh?
No one.
So how did you decide on Miami out of all places?
I think it was watching all that Miami Vice when I was a kid.
So you just like cruised down there and found a high school
it,
and you're
man.
Like, I'm going to go to school and figure it out?
What I did was I moved down there and I was living in Fort Lauderdale at first off the A1A. Mm. Near the Galleria, and then I started working. I think I was working at like Orange Julius or something like that.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, you know, I sold off a few things that I had, like my little guitars and amplifiers and things like that. And then I moved into Miami.
Yeah.
And I started school at 163rd Biscayne High behind 163rd Biscayne Street Mall.
Right. Now, weren't you required to have like guardians or parents to enroll in school? Really?
No.
So they didn't ask you anything, like where are your parents?
I bought transfer paperwork from the school up north where I was going to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You told them you're moving and to the school and that's it, right? They give you what you
need. I'm here with my mom. Well, she's quite sick and can't make it today or tomorrow or the next day. But here's her signature.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, so you were a smart kid early on.
Now, were you still in touch with your family back home at all? Or you're just like, peace out?
Some. Mm-hmm. Like cousin-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
So when you grew up, you didn't have a very good childhood?
I had a fun childhood.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty cool. It moved a little fast, but yeah, my childhood was fun.
Yeah. Awesome.
Wow.
So you went to Miami, you finished high school there, and then you moved to...
Finished high school, I moved back to D.C. maybe for a couple of months, and then I moved to New York for 3 years.
I see. Okay, and what were you looking for in New York?
Anything.
Anything?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just wanted to change scenery and stuff?
At the time, I wanted to get out of Miami. Yeah. You know, I'm an East Coast kid, so right. New York obviously was the next place to be.
Right. Are you like impatient? I mean, are you restless? Do you like to move around?
I had ADHD, yes. And I'm
move around. You like to move around.
Well, the world is my home.
Oh, okay.
You can drop me off anywhere. I think I'll be all right.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Well, you already proved it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, at age 16. That's ballsy, man.
I know. I mean, I was sent to another country at 16, but at least I had some family and I wasn't alone, you know.
Sure.
And it was by choice, so... But that's different. So you lived in New York. Did you know anybody there when you moved there?
I have family members in New York, but none that I really was in contact with, an older generation. But I did have friends there.
I see. Okay. So they kind of helped you and stuff like that when you got started? Right. Yeah. And what were you doing there in New York?
Yeah, I started working security at bars, clubs, that kind of thing.
I see. Okay. So that appealed to you, like working in that line of work?
I don't know if it appealed. I mean, it's just kind of where I was at.
I see. Okay. But it is pretty dangerous, right? I mean, you have to... walk with a gun and everything. And
Club security?
Right. No. Not in club security, huh? No. You don't need that?
No. Just throwing people out for being drunk kind of thing. Give me your ID.
Yeah.
But, you know, at this time in New York was, you know, the back end of the 80s. I mean, it, you know, it was a different kind of animal then than
that's
it is
true,
now.
That's true, yeah. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of partying and stuff.
Oh, I'm sure. I know I can't really say much for that considering I'm wearing a shirt that says 90s kid. Born in 1990.
There you go. Wow. So that's cool. So you lived in New York for a couple of years?
New York, yeah.
Yeah, and then you moved to Atlanta then?
Yep. I left New York in 91 and moved to Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
When I was 21.
What were you looking for in Atlanta?
I have a sister there. I was kind of trying to be a little close to her.
Right. So I'm seeing a pattern of like trying to find yourself and stuff, right? I mean, would you say that's
I don't really think I cared at the time.
Yeah. But you were running from something, right?
I don't know if I was running. I was just trying to be somewhere else.
Experiencing.
Yeah.
You know.
So you were seeking it out.
I mean, even now, I mean, I still do the same thing. I live between Los Angeles. I have homes in Europe. I mean, I'm leaving for Europe in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. You know,
I was just there last month. So, I mean... I get around.
Yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm. The world is my home.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me. All right.
That's cool.
So in Atlanta, did you keep doing security and things?
Yeah, and then I got heavily into the music scene, and I did that for a bit, and then...
Were you able to make a living at it at all?
Hell no.
No, huh?
No. It was kind of like stay on the road, keep working kind of thing, right. Get burned by management.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that was the only thing you were doing, right? Or did you have a day job too?
I enjoyed it. Well, yeah, I did a day job. Okay. I mean, I did the security thing and, you know, other things. And,
yeah.
You know.
And got into music. Have you always been into music before?
Yeah. I have. But my heart's not in it anymore.
Yeah. But you enjoyed it for a while, right?
Most certainly did.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like fun. You know, I wouldn't mind being in a band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always wanted to be in one. I had one. I had a couple when I was young, but nothing like, you know, like serious grown-up stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But, so it's cool. I mean, I like when people pursue music, but unfortunately it's not very easy, you know. So.
No, it's not.
So then you got to go back to your day job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or someone else's day job.
Right. And in Atlanta, you lived for how long?
I stayed in Atlanta for some time, and I... changed professions.
Mm-hmm.
And around 1995, 96, I got into the investigative industry.
Oh, okay.
And
did you meet someone in it that talked you into
it?
You
know, honestly, honestly, I wanted to get into personal security, you know, the bodyguard work kind of thing.
Okay.
Being in Atlanta, not knowing where that was going to go. In Georgia, you can obtain a private investigator's license at the same time and work with that license and do the same type of work.
Mm-hmm.
I took that on to have it to fall back on. But I went to the top three EP schools in the country, bodyguard schools. Also one in France, two in London. And I was very fortunate enough to start working for a pretty big name just coming into the industry. And then I started to learn everything that I could about private investigator type of work. And actually the first case that I ever worked, I went on to work for an individual that owned his own private investigative firm in Atlanta. And the first case that I ever worked was a 16-year-old missing girl that he had been looking for a couple of months. And I found her in 8 hours.
Really?
Wow.
You did? Wow, that's pretty cool.
Check you out. That's awesome.
Wow.
I was a slight bit younger, and I just thought like a kid.
Right. So when you go to school, they actually teach you how to...
I don't really know of any private investigator schools. I have a friend here in the Valley that owns a school that's pretty... They do pretty good, and,
right.
and he's very capable.
Right.
You know, I
mean, but they do have the school for bodyguards and stuff, right?
Yes. The EP schools that I went to, they're pretty known throughout the world.
Yeah.
They're not like a weekend class.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine. You know, how long does it take to go through a course like that?
The shortest one I did, I think, was 30 days.
30 days. Yeah. Okay, wow. That's not a big deal. Yeah, I mean, you can get through that pretty easily.
So they teach you how to, like, fight and defend and keep a lookout?
Yeah, they teach you a lot of the ends of the industry. But, you know, ultimately, when you get out there in the street, you know, you throw that book out the window.
Really? There's different rules.
They can't teach you to deal with jet lag and, you know, still negotiate your clients. When your client has a 20-hour schedule, you have a 31.
Right.
You know?
Wow. Yeah. So you started your private investigation in Atlanta.
Yes.
And did you have any fascination with this? I mean, what is it like? You wanted to help people out?
I think that's part of it. Initially, when I got into it, I just wanted to learn and know everything that I could about the industry itself. And once I started learning, it was kind of obvious that, you know, not everyone can do this kind of work.
Right, I can imagine, yeah.
And I do get a personal sense of satisfaction when, you know, I can help change someone's life.
Right. Yeah, and it's also interesting. I mean, you get to investigate and things like that, you know. So it's, I'm sure it's not like in the movies, but at the same time, because I remember actually, like, many years ago, I was thinking of getting into private investigation or something, because... I thought,
really?
I thought this might be really interesting. You're helping people out, you know, and it's like almost like police work, you know, when you investigate and stuff. So, but somehow I figured, I don't know if I want to do that, you know. So now, would you consider it a high risk job to be doing?
It depends.
Bodyguard.
Bodyguard work.
Yeah, bodyguard
work. It depends. Okay. Here in Los Angeles, it's kind of cush.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal. Your biggest problem is paparazzi.
Right.
I've worked other jobs abroad with, you know, other individuals that, yeah, it can be dangerous.
Right. Now, with paparazzi, so do they probably teach you how to deal with them and stuff, huh? Because it's probably something
per
that happens
se,
a lot.
But, you know, again, you know, everything goes out the window when you get out
in
the street.
Like in the
That's
moment.
True, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how people can live with those paparazzi. You know, the other day I was driving on Ventura Boulevard. Suddenly I'm seeing like a bunch of guys running around the car, all with cameras, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this woman got into the car. I don't know who she was. I was driving too fast. But at the same time, I was thinking, God, you know, I mean, these guys don't leave you alone. She was coming out of a shop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She just went buying something. So I guess that can become a problem.
Yep.
Yeah,
you
they're
know?
So like, oh my gosh, like they have no mercy at all.
Yeah,
what's
like
terrible
when the princess died.
That's what gets me is like, you know, when these celebrities are trying to walk somewhere with their kids and these paparazzis are like knocking into their kids.
Right.
It's like this is all that they know. They're being brought up to know every time they leave the house or leave the car, you know, okay, like we gotta, you know, hunker down and run in because all these strange men with, you know, flashing lights are coming after us.
Right.
You know, like what kind of childhood is that? Like they really need to come up with some sort of rule or something that when there's, especially when there's kids involved, like paparazzi need to stay, like, you know, there needs to be a personal bubble that they got to stay out of.
Yeah,
that, you know,
that'll never happen. But one of the things, one of the things that, right, one of the things is when I work with a client, it's teaching them how to work with security as well as their children.
Right.
And at the same time, you know, you kind of set rules and standards. I mean, it's difficult to tell someone that makes a bazillion dollars a year that we can't go to their favorite place or, you know, drive a specific route that they like to take. It's a very difficult thing.
Wow.
But when you get a client that can see and understand that and understand that their, you know, their life's at stake, they kind of fall in line.
Right.
And a lot of people have the misconception of bodyguard work that it's important to be big and intimidating and be able to put your hands on people and this, have Chuck Norris in your back pocket. That's right. Not what personal
not
protection
true,
is about.
Yeah.
It's more important in your advance work.
Right.
To not put your client in that situation to begin with.
Right. Because you probably seldom get into a situation where you have to physically fight someone.
Which that is difficult within itself.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. Pretty interesting. So so you were doing that for a while now. So you started getting into private investigation and stuff, and then you moved to L.A. from Atlanta?
Yes.
Okay. And
I was between Europe and Atlanta at the same time.
Oh, really? So what were you doing in Europe at the time?
I was working for a well-known celebrity client.
Okay. And they were American or European?
She's American.
Oh, she's American, but she was living or traveling
right.
abroad, and you just went with her and stuff. Wow. And was that like challenging work? Was there a lot happening, or was it pretty much like boring stuff?
It's usually a contractual thing between the studios. And at the time, this individual was working with multiple other well-known individuals, and they had put out some major films.
Mm.
And she has two children, so, you know, it was one of those things where she wanted to be in Europe, but all the, you know, junkets and promotion and the filming and everything was going on everywhere in the world.
Right.
So it was one of those situations where I'd leave Atlanta on the 1st. On the 3rd, I'm in China, you know, they're filming.
Wow.
And then I'm back on the 28th, leave again on the 1st, come back on the 30th. Yeah. I probably spent a month out of 2004 at home.
Really? Yeah. That's all, huh? Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of travel.
And then it just made more sense to just move to Los Angeles. But when I did, she moved back to Europe.
Oh, really? So did you have to continue working for her there?
No, I actually went on with a couple of other celebrities here.
I see. Yeah. Okay. And so you moved to L.A. figuring there's more work here?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, because we have so many celebrities.
And I needed the change in the environment as well. I mean, I've always loved Los Angeles.
Oh, really? You'd been here before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool here, huh? A lot of people come here.
No, you can't beat the weather compared to
the weather,
yeah.
That's big. I love Chicago, man. It's like those winters. No, thank you. I'm good.
Yeah. So you were doing this for a while, and then when did you decide to start your own company?
I started Third Echelon Investigations, I believe, in 2007.
Okay.
It was actually a transition, or not a transition per se. It just took a minute to get things going the way that I wanted them going, because I wanted to open real proper, especially with, you know, the state of California being as litigious as it is.
I see. So you have to get a license, right?
Yeah. In the state of California, you have to have a minimum of 6,000 verifiable investigative hours just to apply to take the exam.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Wow, that's a lot.
Over the course of three consecutive years.
Wow.
Oh, man.
That's a lot.
So,
I mean, that's a lot of work to find, right, for someone who doesn't have a license yet.
I've been doing this work full time. I am licensed in other states, and I was at the time.
Right, but not here, right?
Right, not here.
Yeah.
So basically, you take your proof of, you know, hours to the state.
Oh, I see. So those hours helped, right? I mean, they don't have to be done in California.
No.
Okay, gotcha.
Right.
Cool. So you got your license, and then you decided you're going to open your own place?
Exactly.
Okay. And, wow. So did you hire any people then, or did you just start yourself?
At the time, no. I was still kind of just a one-man operation.
Right.
I still had a lot of my celebrity clients. I've worked some pretty high-end cases here
in
Los Angeles.
So now, so that's what I'm wondering about. I mean, people, not everybody hires a private investigator. I mean, sometimes you have to be pretty desperate to get to that point. Would you say it's true?
I don't know if desperation is a factor. I mean, in all honesty, I can't sit here and give all the reasons for why my clients hire me. Some people right. just want to know what's going on.
Right. Wow. So, yeah, so they, and especially, I guess, people that maybe support other people and they want to see what's going on.
Sure.
Work, marriage, sure. family, things like that, right? Okay.
So it's just anything and everything, whatever somebody wants investigated.
Exactly.
You guys will take
A lot of investigators, you know, they prioritize specific areas and fields. I also do, mm-hmm. but mine are much broader.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and then you started getting into child trafficking. How did that come about?
Yes. I met a woman last year who was somewhat into the human trafficking industry, and she wanted to take one of my weapons training courses. Mm-hmm. And she and I talked a little bit, and she really didn't have a direction to go in with, you know, what she wanted to do. She knew what to do and how she wanted to do it, but unfortunately, she was an individual.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of, you know, government organizations, other companies, they, you know, they don't want to invest in an individual they don't know anything about, really. So,
mm-hmm. yeah.
What I did was, is I proceeded to start a new division within my corporation, a nonprofit division, which I made her the director of.
Mm.
And we started with that, and then there was the whole idea of funding that division. And basically the way that division works is kind of like this, and this is all within the vein of human trafficking. You have individuals that go out as first responders that try to talk to these girls on the street, let them know that they have an out, that they have options, that they can help. All you have to do is call us or leave with us right now.
Mm.
And it does work.
Wow.
This is done, you know, a lot of first responders or a lot of church-going people. And they know how to associate, you know, with the mentality of some of these young girls.
Right.
My plan of action is to actually send female security out with these first responder individuals and let them know the same thing. These first responders, though, are all in-house, third echelon investigations,
mm.
you know, type individuals. I came up with the lipstick. When you turn it in the light, a phone number comes up that you can see, and you can call that number, and we'll come extract you at any time from wherever you are.
Wow.
You know, you know, a pimp's going to take my business card, but he's not going to take your makeup.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
So also at the same time, when we have those first responders out with our security staff, I also have two vehicles with investigators in them that are actually helping to build cases on these pimps.
Right.
So, you know, while they're out working that, at the same time, we're watching the pimps, documenting what they're doing. We're working with neighbors and communities that are giving us access to put cars in their driveway to sit surveillance.
Mm.
Businesses that are giving us access to their rooftops late at night so that we can document what we need to help make cases against these pimps.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because basically, you know, the system is set up to even make the girls, you know, criminalize them when they're actually the victim.
Yeah, that's
right.
true.
And so, it's difficult to get, you know, the biggest thing that that police and law enforcement have against these pimps is the girls, but they don't want to talk.
Mm.
So I'll be that voice in the form of an investigation.
I see. Now, what are the first responders? Is that like the
first responders basically go out, usually women, they go out and they actually approach these girls on the street while they're working, let
right.
them know what organization they're from, and, you know, just try to, you know, understand them and build a rapport and
right.
let them know that we can help you.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure those women, those first responders, are pretty familiar with the problem, with what's going on, how to talk
yeah.
to these girls.
Many of them are survivors themselves.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Many of them have been through this situation, and now they're doing their thing to give back and to help.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how do girls end up on the street like that?
10,000 different ways.
Right.
Craigslist, Facebook, the wrong person. I mean...
Right.
This is a big billion-dollar industry happening
really?
In our country.
So they recruit like prostitutes on Craigslist?
Anywhere.
Really? Wow. And these girls actually look for this stuff, right?
In Los Angeles, a lot of it, the way it is there's about 8 tracks between South Central that run out to Sun Valley,
mm-hmm.
off Lancashire and, you know, Western and Manchester, Figueroa.
Uh-huh.
And they're all different tracks.
Right.
Huh. Most of them are all run by pimps that are either with a gang or gang affiliated.
Mm.
So essentially these gangs let them come into their neighborhoods and they let them work. And then, of course, the gang makes a percentage.
Right.
Wow. Oh, my God.
That's scary stuff, man.
This is happening. This is happening not only here, but all over the world.
Right.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
And we're obviously dealing with underage girls as well, right? Or mostly. Or
what I focus on is the underage girls.
Right.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah. How young? I mean, do you see girls as young as like 12, 13?
12. Yeah.
Wow. No way. Oh, my gosh.
There was a girl I had spoke with. Some other individuals that we were working with on the side of law enforcement. A couple of months ago, they arrested a young girl. I believe she was 15 or 16 years old. And they had had her for a little bit. And she wouldn't give up any information. And it turned out the guy that was holding her, that was prostituting her, was holding her 8-month-old child, you know, hostage while she was out there at 15, you know, doing this.
Jeez, oh, my
man.
Gosh.
How do people get into this stuff?
Especially,
man,
because it's like gang affiliated. It's
called money.
I mean, it's not like you're like, okay, I'll do this for a little while to save up some money, then I'll get out. Like, right. Because it's gang affiliated, I feel like there is no getting out.
Right.
Like, your pimp will, like, find you and hurt you
exactly.
And threaten you. Or, like you said, holding your, you know, your child ransom or something. Like, oh, my gosh.
Right.
That's just...
The other thing is, with the exception of money... The individuals, and this is why I want to go for the head meaning the pimp.
Okay.
Okay. These individuals, they do this not only for money, but they enjoy persecuting and hurting other people.
Wow.
That's why I want them.
Right.
Would you do this to your mother? Would you do this to your own sister? Probably not.
Right. Wow. Jeez. Yeah, well, I guess, you know, to join a gang, you have to be pretty, like, unfeeling person, you know. I mean, it's like, I can't imagine if you're a decent human being that you would actually join a gang. So many of these girls actually run away from home, right?
Sure.
It's not like they get kidnapped.
Some run away, some are taken, some are coerced.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, and many of them obviously are taken overseas, right?
Quite a few.
Yeah.
I frequent Spain quite a bit, mm-hmm. you know, some other places in Europe. Right now I'm starting up a new division there, and I'm doing some training law enforcement in Madrid.
Right.
And prostitution there is legal as long as you don't have a pimp.
Oh, really?
Right. So what happens is the pimps, they open these businesses.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Some of them are called whiskerias.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they put girls in there, but they're still paying a pimp.
Wow.
And I was over in August, and there was a girl from Russia that was working at one of these places, and she was 15 years old.
15?
15.
Wow.
Right. How do they get them across the border and stuff? I mean...
It's Europe.
Passports. But from here to there, how does that work?
What do you mean?
From America?
U.S. to Europe?
Yeah, when they transfer a girl from here.
One thing about
there?
Spain is I'm being told by some colleagues there that Spain is one of the most, you know, if you want to be a criminal, that's where you go.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
One thing about Spain is you can be in one city, say, you know, Barcelona, and you could commit a serious crime, go to Madrid, and you've got a clean slate.
Really?
Wow.
Wow. What kind of a place is that?
Jeez,
man.
But there's different places in Europe that you have easy access to. I mean, I know I've brought people out of Japan without an entry visa to get in Japan. You can't leave.
Yeah.
You know, so one of the things I've had to do is take a pirated route through the Philippines and then fly them into another American-friendly country in Europe, say, you know, Rome or Frankfurt.
Right.
Wow.
So there is a lot of intrigue in what you do. I mean, you have to, like, outmaneuver.
You got to think outside
people,
the box. Being
being
an investigator, well, you know, within itself, I mean, you've got to kind of be able to...
You almost have to, like, think like a criminal to...
I don't know if it's think like a criminal. I think more open mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have to be resourceful.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and expect
obviously.
Anything also.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's... You know?
Yeah.
I mean, anything can happen, especially if you're taking these alternative routes, you know. That's,
right. And many kids
stuff.
Are actually kidnapped by their parents, right? One of the parents.
Many of them are. The extractions I've done out of Japan have all been the other parent taking the
Really? Yeah. So it's like a Japanese parent deciding they're going to leave the American wife here?
Because Japan isn't part of the Hague Convention Act.
So they don't have to turn the kids back?
None of our laws count over there.
Really?
And the Japanese keep it Japanese. I was also hired by a woman that was married to a Saudi prince. She had two twin boys and was exiled from Saudi Arabia, and she wanted me to go get these kids.
Wow.
And after about $130,000, I finally surmised there's no way I can get these children away from these individuals and keep people alive.
Yeah, I mean, and you're and you go into a totally different culture and society that's foreign to you, and trying to do some clever things.
Well, with this situation in particular, I mean, I know people everywhere. So essentially what I did was I had someone on the ground in Saudi Arabia open up an export shipping company, which would give us access to boats.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Again, you got to kind of think outside of the scope of
looking at.
But I mean, again, ultimately, just to get these two children away from 23 bodyguards at one time, people would have ended up hurt, you know.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Now, the... You don't have, like, a government backing, though, right? I mean, if you get in trouble overseas and stuff, is the government going to help you? Do you have any protection?
Country that I work in, I'm a European resident. I'm a resident of the European Union. I can live and work in any of the 23, 28 countries of the European Union. So the laws of that country and, you know, being an American also assist. I won't go into any country and do anything that I can't legally do.
Right.
I wouldn't go into another country and do anything that would hurt the individuals I'm working for or the individuals I'm working against.
Yeah, makes sense. You know, I mean, you'd get in trouble every time if you did.
Yeah, I haven't been in business as long as I have doing the wrong thing.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you find that is the problem pretty serious here in L.A.? As far as kids on the streets?
It's a very serious problem here in Los Angeles.
It is.
And within itself, which is why my organization is working, you know, standardly in Los Angeles at this time.
Right. Mm-hmm. So but that's like a global problem, right?
Global.
I mean, this happens
everywhere.
It's
bigger than you can conceive of.
Really? And are there like child porn rings and things like that?
I'm quite sure there are.
There are, right? Wow.
It's all about money and oppression.
Right.
You know, you can oppress someone, that's control.
Right.
Control that's allows you to make more money.
And it's easy to do to younger people, to kids and stuff, right?
Of course.
And that's why they take advantage of them.
Easily manipulated.
Right. And, and I mean, sometimes you see in the movies, you know, they're like, there's like a guy waiting for girls to disembark the train or the airport and stuff and try to approach them right away, you know.
Happens people here. You have pimps, you have gangbangers hanging out at the bus stations in downtown and over here in North Hollywood waiting for girls to step off of them.
Right.
They're also there trying to keep these girls from getting back on the bus. We grabbed a girl out of Hollywood a couple of weeks ago. She couldn't go to any bus station because these guys had them staked out.
Really?
Oh, jeez, my gosh. Man. Yes, that's what I mean. Wow. Like, you can't even get out even if you wanted to.
Right.
You know, yeah, they own you.
The games on the streets weren't designed to let you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only in, right?
Yeah.
But my organization's also created, along with, you know, this division, a campaign. Mm-hmm. It's a silent photographic protest called the X'd Out campaign to help raise funds and awareness. Each month we find a celebrity photographer to come out and donate their time and their skill sets, and we hold an event where people come out and pay to have their picture taken, and we paint the message of stop rape and torture of our children on their arms, and they go up on our campaign wall, which is on my website.
Oh, wow.
Each month we do one of these, and the last one, I'm actually turning them into events. I'm finding bands, you know, hip-hop recording artists, other people, and I want to reach a new demographic. Again, this starts with our children, and kids like music,
right?
Kids like shows,
right? Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of these bands and artists, they reach those children, and if they can let them know, you know, that's getting a message out there to where this whole thing starts.
That's true. Yeah,
that's very true.
And I guess these are the things that you really have to do to get awareness from people.
Awareness is the first step.
Right.
I mean, people need to know what their children are doing, what they're doing online, who they're talking to. I spoke with a friend of mine on the East Coast. She has a 12-year-old daughter, and her 12-year-old daughter has a Facebook page, and she's talking sexual to men on it.
Really?
Oh.
Jeez.
Yikes.
Yeah. That's the thing. Online is pretty nasty place to be.
Of course, she's calling me, asking me what she should do, and I say, do what I tell you now, not what I tell you when you call me and I have to go find her.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, do it in advance before it's too late.
Yeah, that's frightening.
Wow. So there are situations, I guess, when girls are not necessarily in prostitution, but they get seduced by men or things like that online.
Anything can happen.
Anything mm-hmm. can happen, huh? And this happens all the time, right? Now, how can an older man seduce, like, convince a 12 or 13-year-old girl to come and see him? You know, like they do all these busts on TV.
It's all about control.
Yeah? Yeah? But how do you control a little girl if you're, like, so far from her?
Listen, I can't really get into that without taking hours to explain the psyche of, you know, a sick person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It does happen.
Yeah.
I mean, also, you know, they could be, their photos could be of, like, someone else.
Well,
you know what I mean? They don't know, you know, these young girls might not know that they're talking to some old creeper.
That's true.
It all starts in the home, and obviously these girls are missing something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's true. What, like love and attention?
Whatever it may be.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, like what you were saying earlier, the, you know, events and using music to, you know, get through to these kids is definitely a good, you know, tactic instead of like a lecture, like throwing it in your face. You know, kids, especially teenagers, are like, yeah, sure, you know, whatever.
They'll end up in high school in Miami.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The X'd Out campaign has actually been very good. We're getting a lot of interest in it. Some celebrities are following what we're doing, companies, corporations, individuals, law enforcement. I want it to be bigger. The last event that we had, Cherry Bomb, a local band here from Los Angeles, performed. The next X Out campaign is going to be at the Down and Out on October 26th at 1 p.m. We have the Low Highs playing, or the High Lows playing, ATM and IMD and April Atrocity, who's a kind of like a hip hop hype thing.
Oh.
So what we'll do is,
I'm sure it speaks to the kids.
Cool.
Yeah. So what we'll do is at the same time the event is you know, the artists are performing, you can come pay a $10 donation at the door and we paint you, put you up on our campaign wall.
Sounds good.
That sounds awesome.
And people can find out more on your website.
Yeah,
I imagine.
The actual website for the campaign is xd-out.com.
Okay.
X-out.com.
Okay. And but there's a link from your website too, right?
Yes.
And your website again, give it out again.
It's going to be www.thirdechelonpi.com.
Right. And so if people can contact you directly if they need help.
Yes.
And then you I guess you serve not just LA but the whole country.
Listen, if somebody calls me asking for help, I mean, I'm going to do whatever I can to help them, no matter who and where they are.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you'll go there too?
Wow.
I don't turn anything down but my collar.
Right. What did you?
I don't turn anything down but my collar.
Excuse me.
I like it. Took me a second, but I'm like, oh yeah, there we go, got it.
East Coast quirks.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, Jeff Monty, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you both very much.
Of course. Yes, and so remind us again when the event is.
Yeah, the next X'd Out campaign event is going to be Saturday, October 26th at the Down and Out Bar on 5th and Broadway in downtown Los Angeles.
Okay.
At 1 p.m.
Sounds good. Well, I'm going to try and be there because it sounds pretty...
I want to try and make it too. That sounds really awesome.
Please do.
It really does. Okay, well, thank you so much, everybody. Check it out, Third Echelon Investigations, and the website is thirdechelonpi.com. And if you need to talk to Jeff, he'll be there, and his team. How many people do you have on your team?
48 worldwide.
Really?
Wow.
Well,
that's impressive.
Yeah, you're a big deal.
Good for you.
All right.
That's awesome.
Okay, well, everybody, thank you all for joining us. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you again.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia. is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.